In this world, there are good guys and there are bad guys. And I will not be bullied into submission.
You are reading the man's part.
Oh, God.
Would you like to start over?
Yes, I would.
I will not be bullied into submission.
Sorry to interrupt. Your wife is online, too?
Let's go! Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so that you folks have the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood, and that was a voice from the past and the future. Netflix's new series, Glow, based on the real-life story of the gorgeous ladies of wrestling, which I have the vaguest memories of at the age of, I don't know, 8 or 9, seeing the Phil Donahue show and seeing him tear it up, where later you'd see sideshow events and stuff. It was crazy. Anyway, I'm looking forward to it. How about you?
I am looking forward to it now that it's got Alison Brie in it, which I knew, but, you know, seeing her on screen is great. Trailer looks really good. You know who may or may not be a huge Glow fan, because I've never asked him, is our guest today, Ewan Rankin of BTN. Ewan, welcome to the show.
Hello, boys.
All right, you and you, yeah, you can let it all out. If you're a fan, a 20-year, 30-year veteran fan of Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, let us know.
Well, so when I was a kid, I used to go to my grandmother's on a Saturday so my parents could get some alone time. And we used to watch wrestling, and it used to come from Stoke-on-Trent's civic baths and things like that with Big Daddy and giant haystacks. So I got really fond memories of crap wrestling.
Close enough. Sounds like you're a fan.
I'm sure that, well, I have never heard of it before this evening, but I'll be there.
Yeah, yeah. Mark Maron is in it, prominently featured in the trailer as well.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, folks, we've got a lot to talk about, so let's get right to our primary target. Now, because Ewan is in the UK, we made sure to have our primary target be a survey of US users, so that it has no bearing on his actual experience. But I'm actually curious. I could not find any UK numbers like this, but I'm curious if anecdotally you think this is similar. The Interactive Advertising Bureau and Maru Matchbox released results of an online survey that indicates 56% of US adults own a streaming enabled television. 54% of TV watching time is spent on non-linear TV. That's on demand, something you're watching later, Netflix, etc. And 20% of that goes to digital. Oddly, 50% said they would rather watch commercials than pay for ad-free subscriptions of digital services. 44% said commercials and digital are less intrusive to them than on regular TV.
Can I ask a question? And this is an unfair thing to put you in the position of answering on the survey, but I wonder, I would love so much to know how the question about ads or pay was phrased. Because if it said, would you sign up for a pay service or would you rather watch ads? Like, the default human position is, I want to press a button and see the thing. And if that means I have to watch ads to get it, that seems like less work than signing up for a service or whatever, you know?
Yeah, I'll see if I can find something in either the press release or the study while I look at that, because that is a really good question. Ewan, how does this match up with your experience?
I would, because it's funny you should ask this, because me and the entire population of the UK were down the pub last night, and they definitely said that use and own are two different things in terms of digital television. I think there's an awful lot of us probably over here, just the same as there, will own a digital television and have digital services through it. Whether we use them or not is a different question entirely. I've got Netflix on my TV, never used it on my TV. I've always used it off Apple TV or off mobile devices. I've never actually bothered it through my TV service at all.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Like, I feel like having a television that is web connectable is roughly equivalent to saying you purchased your television within the last half decade, right? So it's like really all this is saying is,
yeah,
is more than half of all the TVs were bought in the last 5 years.
So I found the phrasing of the question.
Yes.
Are you ready to respond, Brian?
Yes, I am.
Pretend that I am on the phone.
All right.
From Maru and Matchbox.
Hello. Is this Maru and Matchbox? It's Brian Brushwood, Cord Killers.
Hey, Brian.
You know the show. Don't act like you don't know the show. Listen.
I normally ask an entire 20-minute long survey, but I'm just going to ask you this one part of it just for now, okay?
All right.
Here's the question. How much do you agree or disagree with the following statements? I am more likely to stream video to my TV because fewer commercials are shown than on regular TV.
Oh, wow. That's amazing, because that statement might not even be factually true, but it certainly shapes the narrative to throw that in there.
I would prefer to watch commercials while streaming video to my TV than pay for a subscription.
Okay, yeah, I suddenly want to throw this all out, because it's like, if you're going to phrase it this way, keep going.
The commercials shown during video I stream to my TV are less disruptive than those shown on regular TV.
Okay, well, but again, like, those on regular TV are not targeted at you. The ones shown, they're at least breaking down your demographic.
Yeah, and I won't even – the last two are just about whether they're better or what more memorable. And it all just goes back to the fact that, well, they can target you a little better with digital. But, yeah, I would prefer to watch commercials while streaming video to my TV than pay for a subscription. Really does sound like what you were saying, Brian, of would you like to sign up for some really complicated thing or press a button and have things stream but have commercials?
Yeah. Dude, look at that.
The definition of the term stream there as well, guys. I mean, how many people, when questioned, actually understood what stream meant as opposed to flowed over the airwaves?
Yeah, no, in their mind, I'm sure a lot of people were like, stream, that means watch, right? Okay, yeah, I would like to watch.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, all kidding aside, I know you can't speak on behalf of the entire United Kingdom.
Yes, he can. He totally can. It's in his contract.
I was down at the pub last night with him.
Yeah, he was at the pub last night with him.
Even though you were at the pub, you know, I don't want to put you in that position. But you have a different app ecosystem in the UK. Like, all your major channels have apps. You have the whole Freeview system. Like, it's a different approach.
The Freeview's kind of just all the stuff that would go to air anyway, and you'd get via a satellite box if you bought it and didn't buy any subscriptions. There's some stuff that's pumped out that's so rubbish that it relies on advertising at 5 slots per hour. And it's not unwatchable, but it's cookery shows and stuff that's just not mass appeal. You'd never get anything that was put in a prime time, like Billions or Orange is the New Black or any of those kind of mainstream TV series that would actually pump it through a network, and you'd not pay a subscription for it. So I don't know if that's even a comparison, because all the stuff that goes to free to air is either the BBC or it's crap. So
and it sounds like it's the same for you as it is for me, which is, yeah, I've got a connected TV with a bunch of apps on it that I never use. I'm always using the apps on the boxes connected to my TV.
Yeah. No, I switched just because we got a connected TV. It's like, oh man, fill your boots. And within 10 minutes, it was like, okay, I'm not bothering anymore.
All right. Well, we got a bunch of things on how to watch this week for you. Not lots of little tidbits, but before we get to that, real quickly, if you're not up to speed, we have a plan where we want to take all of our back episodes of Spoiler in Time and break them up by show. That way, if you're somebody who's like, yeah, man, I missed the S.H.I.E.L.D. rewatch that you guys did, and I really want to do that, but I don't want to have to wade through all the other stuff, we have a project, Brian, to break that up and make it easier.
Heck yeah, man. Dude, it'll be a searchable database in its final form where you're suddenly able to watch right along with us and get our impressions. And think about this. Let's say you realize we're creeping up on what, 6-7 years of doing this? How many years have we been doing this now?
I mean, if you count frame rate, yeah. For sure.
Okay, so spoiler alert, we're going to be alive a few more years, which means that no matter how late you are to whatever show it is, you can watch it along with us and you can share in our exact reactions to that moment. But the project can only happen if we hit what number, Bryce?
1850
patrons.
So we need 134.
134 patrons. So there's 134 of you guys out there who enjoy our show and you haven't quite identified as one of those people who signs up at Patreon. Let me tell you, man, The water's real warm over on this side because we've eaten it. My point is, it's comfortable. You're going to be super happy. You'll never even notice it on your bill. You'll be making a world of difference to us, and we'll be able to start this project, which we really should come up with a specific project name for this.
Project Breaking Up Spoiler and Time into Separate Feeds.
Okay, that's...
Okay, we'll work on that.
Yeah,
we'll
workshop it. No wrong answers.
Patreon.com/CordKillers is the place to go. Let's talk about how to watch. So PBS Kids has their own HDMI streaming stick. It's like a Chromecast, shaped like a race car, because it's kids. It's $50. At least it'll be $50 at Walmart starting May 24th. They'll be selling it elsewhere later. Includes a remote. And here's the kicker. It features several games and 100 hours of programming stored locally. So even if you're like in a motel room where you can't get on the Wi-Fi, or maybe it doesn't even have Wi-Fi, you can watch a bunch of shows just by plugging this thing into an HDMI port on the television. It can, in fact, connect through Wi-Fi, though, and then it gets access to everything on the PBS Kids streaming channel.
Tom, I'm not going to lie. I read the title of this, and I went to my garage, and I pulled back an old secret tunnel to a pole barn, and I reached back, and I found underneath a giant clump of hay an old rusted pitchfork. And I came back, and then I read the second part of this, and it was talking about, like, oh, it's shaped like a race car. And I had pulled out my grindstone. I used my whetstone. I ground it down, and I was in the middle of taking I got it to a fine point finish, and I was in the middle of rubbing it with one of those polishing cloths that you do on chrome. And then I got to the part where it says it has 100 hours of content that will shut up your kid anywhere you can find an HDMI port. And then I realized this is the most brilliant thing in the entire universe. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Just put that pitchfork right back under the hay. Ewan, what do you think of this idea of, like, I think it's kind of genius to combine offline portable content with the streaming capability.
We don't get PBS over here unless you get it via your Sky TV thing, in which case this doesn't help in the slightest. So.
Well, it could, because it's got 100 hours of programming that's offline. If you can get a hold of one, you can take advantage of that.
It shuts the kids up and lets you go down to the bar for an extra beer.
That's what I'm talking about.
There's a lot of hotels now popping up in the UK of the budget range that have got TVs that have HDMI slots that you can plug into, and they don't, you know, a lot of places you go, you plug into the HDMI and nothing happens because it's some kind of closed link that's using the Ethernet process. In a lot of hotels now, it's not happening. So you can actually use the TV for plugging your laptop into it, plugging your iPad into it, and doing a load of other things. So this is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah.
And it would be cool if the BBs, you know, the BBC's kids channel did something similar.
Well,
I'm sure.
And keep in mind,
CBeebies would be great.
We're barreling towards a future in which the moment you walk in, tell me if I'm wrong, and I'm going to put on my futurism hat here for a second here, Tom. At some point in the future, we want convenience so much that it seems like there are certain tokens of our preferences that we will make completely public. So it's like the moment you walk into the hotel room, it will know all of your subscriptions, and it will know what you prefer to have in terms of in general lighting, in general television. And all
this weekend,
it's going to start playing that immediately. But until we get the point to that, we're going to have to plug in plastic cars to our TVs.
Yeah. And it's something the kid can play with in the back seat too. Looks pretty durable, you know. So there you go.
You mean as a car?
Yeah, just as a car.
I think as a parent, there's a switch over though. That's the thing that I'm struggling with at the moment. My daughter loves her iPad, and she sits and watches YouTube constantly. And there's a bit of me and my wife, because we're both nearly 50, and we're kind of like, oh, I'm not happy with her sitting watching TV all the time. Why don't you go out in the street and play with a stick and a hoop? She'll watch it for like 2 or 3 hours, and then she'll stop and she'll come in the kitchen and she'll say, Dad, have we got? And she'll list a whole list of components. And I go, yeah, okay. So we get a few of those things. And sometimes it's flour and water and that kind of simple stuff. And she'll go, I've learned how to do this. And she's learned how to do something off YouTube, and now she practically wants to do it. And I think that's absolutely brilliant. Until yesterday morning. Uh-oh. When she said, "Dad, could we do an experiment?" And I said, "What's that?" She said, "Could we mummify a pigeon?"
No, I've had the exact same experience with my 9-year-old. She's figured out how to make slime, how to make non-Newtonian fluids and all this stuff. I mean, it's like, yeah, exactly. There's a lot to be learned by getting your kid to quit interrupting your Hearthstone.
From programming for the children to programming for the cheap, Tubi TV has raised $20 million for its ad-free supported streaming service. If you haven't heard about Tubi, it has 200 partners, including Lionsgate, MGM, Paramount, Stars, and others. There are 50,000 titles. I'll be honest, it's mostly movies, but they're good quality, you know, top-level movies, even if they aren't recent. Selection is not all available at the same time either. They rotate things through so it feels like they've got a fresh selection. They partner across anime, international films, Korean, Chinese, and British TV to give you a bunch of international options. And they're available on Android, iOS, Chromecast, Roku, Apple TV, Fire TV, Xbox, and smart TV platforms. So they're pretty widely available. I just don't think a lot of people realize that, you know, if they're like, you know what, things are tight, I can't even afford the Netflix or Hulu subscription fees, they've got an option to do some streaming with some pretty high quality movies and TV shows here.
Well, it's funny because like right now I would say that just about everybody listening, you have Netflix, right? We all have Netflix, right? Yeah. If you could right now suddenly save the $8 or $10 a month that you're paying or $12 a month and inject ads, let's say apples to apples, same content just with ads. I don't know that many people would want to give up their Netflix to do that.
I think the problem that the TV market's got is it hasn't grasped the idea of consumerism. And that's the real bugbear I have, really, with the cord-cutting process is there are so many places that are saying, okay, fine, well, I'll pay you X amount for 40% of the film output for the next 5 years so that it can be exclusively on my platform. And you don't get a lot of supermarkets that say, right, okay, Coke, look, if I exclusively sell your product, you don't sell to anywhere else. You don't put it in KFC, you don't put it in McDonald's, you don't put it anywhere else. You sell it just through Walmart. They'd laugh at you and go, oh, sorry, but we'll buy your damn store. And that's where the music industry and the movie industry don't get the fact that what they need is open competition. And if this thing is providing open competition and it's got a duplication of existing films on existing platforms that are multiples, and when you speak into your Apple TV and say, I want to watch, and you say the title of the film, you get three choices. Do you get it on this service? Do you get it on Netflix? Do you get it on Apple TV to buy it? Or do you get it on Amazon Prime? Because, of course, that's coming as well. Then that's when we've got the nirvana for the consumer, and people are still making money, but the exclusivity is what breeds piracy and what kills the opportunity of markets for consumerism.
Yeah.
I look at something like Tubi TV, and to me, it's the equivalent of those off channels on broadcast that cater to people who just either can't or don't want to afford cable television before streaming was an option, and say, you know what, I'll just watch some old episodes of All in the Family. You know what? Why
don't,
not?
I'm don't not care. That picky. I just need noise on. Just.
And Tubi TV is like a higher quality of that because they've got, you know, True Grit and Gladiator and, you know, pretty high level movies with limited commercial interruptions. So
is cable dying though?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, so there you go. That's my point. You need consumerism. You need competition. You need an expanse of the openness of the industry. Then you'll get a true market, which is consumer-driven. At the moment, you don't get that. And this kind of service will help as long as it gets content.
Now, I would find it odd if it was you, Ewan, who put this next story in here, but I didn't. And I have a feeling Fraser Cain may have landed in our dock. But in Ontario and Quebec.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I'm getting a confession right over here.
Oh, I found this online this morning and I put it in the dock.
Oh,
here.
Okay. So it was about Canada and I immediately jumped to Fraser. In Ontario and Quebec, racist. Bell is launching Alt TV to Bell Internet customers starting at $15 a month. You'll have to have unlimited internet. So you got the 25 megabit megabit per second down plan. Does not include a DVR or live broadcast pausing. It's just streaming. It's all app-based, available on mobile devices and Apple TV, and the fine print indicates there's a smaller selection of live VOD content on wireless connections outside the home. So they do that out-of-home restrictions. It is, however, one of the first widespread TV via app devices in Canada, and it's pretty cheap, but it does require a specific internet plan. So it's kind of like Comcast's plan, where they're saying, we won't make you subscribe to cable. We'll sell you this Xfinity Stream plan, which they're renaming, but you have to be a Comcast internet customer. In this case, you have to be a Bell customer.
It's basically
these cable companies trying to put a stopgap in and say, we don't want to lose customers to other internet companies. We don't want to lose the money they're paying for cable, but if they're going to cancel cable anyway, let's give it an option that keeps them in the tent and keeps their money instead of it going to PlayStation Viewersling.
I actually have plenty to say on this, so you have a choice. Either we can delve a half hour into finance and economics, or we can move on to under surveillance. Bryce,
finance,
what's your
and
pick?
Economics, you say?
Probably.
It's time for What to Watch. Under surveillance. It's all about location, location,
location. Under surveillance.
Fox announced its fall 2017 lineup will include an X-Men spinoff called The Gifted, a comedic X-Files like show called Ghosted, and this one looks really good to me, Seth MacFarlane in starring in and producing a series parodying Star Trek, maybe even parodying Galaxy Quest, called The Orville.
It did have a very Galaxy Quest feel to the whole thing.
Yeah. The only thing I don't know is if this is a show. Like, Galaxy Quest was a show, a movie about
show.
Oh, no.
I think this is they're going to play this straight.
The show.
The show. This is not a show about making a show. This is a show. This is the actual future parody situation. I got to tell you, man, like for as good of an idea as this is, and for as beautifully well executed as it is, I don't know. I kept waiting for there to be that hilarious moment in it. I don't know.
In the trailer,
but yeah. it did have Scott Grimes, who I'm a fan of, and
Catherine Palicki as first officer.
Wait, which one?
She's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Also was in the Friday Night Lights.
I'll take your word for both of those.
Okay.
So, what about you, Ewan? Do you get remotely caught up in this kind of American early announcement?
I like this. I like the being teased with stuff. You know, when we did the last time I was on, I think they were just about to release Hand of God and a few other series, and that kind of really teased me into watching it, and I really enjoyed the first series of Hand of God. With this one, I'll definitely watch Odyssey. Orville. I looked at it and thought Orville Wilbur, right? Yeah, okay,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
there
sure.
We go. Or it could be Orville, the green ventriloquist duck that had Keith Harris's hand shoved up its butt for 25 years.
You know what?
On
it
British
seems like
on
either
Saturday
one
night.
Of those are equally likely. Now that I look
Orville
at it,
Orville Redenbacher.
It could be.
Could be Orville Redenbacher.
I love Galaxy Quest. I love my Star Trek. So I will watch this and give it a fair chance. The only thing with Seth MacFarlane for me is sometimes he is just genius and I belly laugh till I'm crying. And other times I watch him and think, how the hell did you get any money to produce this rubbish? What's the word I'm looking for?
Heterogeneous.
He is a mercurial character. Mercurial.
There you go.
Mercurial character. He can do amazing things and crap things in the same breath. So I will love to watch this, definitely.
Orange is the New Black has its season 5 trailer out. Season comes out June 9th. Personally, I kind of fell off last season. Didn't ever finish. I'm not saying I'll never go back and watch it, but what about the rest of you?
I've given up a long time ago.
Season 3 was a decent season. Season 2 was a really good season. Season 3, when she started selling the underwear, it was kind of like, that's a bit weak. Last season, it just seemed like it was setting it up for the season that's coming. And I loved watching Orange is the New Black because it was the metaphor of life. It gave you the highs and the lows. It gave you the laugh and the cry moments of these people. And I think the last season, it just gave you cry moments. And who's going to watch that?
I don't think with all the hype surrounding it, anybody's surprised that American Gods has been renewed for a season two, so it will be coming back to Stars. Saturday, however, a surprise happened. NBC reversed its decision to cancel the show Timeless. They had canceled Timeless. They had put it on its list of canceled shows. But then they say outcry from fans caused them to reconsider, and a 10-episode season will air sometime in 2018. They haven't nailed it down, and will reportedly be more family-friendly. And in fact, in the airtime, it'll be aired a little earlier in the evening.
I got to tell you, man, like at some point you start to realize you could make the show that sells the Colgate, that makes the money, that allows you to buy the ads, or you could see a groundswell of fan support and realize, oh, wait, this is about $1 million to $10 million of free publicity we're getting. You know, if we did bother to make more episodes, it seems like all of this would bolster us. Plus, we have new fan, you know, metadata that tells us, you know, what people want to see.
Also, if you're looking at a cult hit already, you know that there's a dedicated fan base out there. And you know that you've got all these VOD deals for YouTube TV and Hulu out there that can get people to catch up on it. It might make sense. I'm not saying this is what they did, but it might make sense to cancel the show expecting the outcry so that you can then come out and say, oh, we've listened to the fans, Tom, and we're definitely going to bring it back.
Tom, this is my gig, being the irrational, insane, conspiracy theory-oriented one. What are you doing?
I'm just saying, it was pretty quick from we're canceling it to Saturday. Yeah, oh, we're not canceling.
You're not willing to accept that maybe they're a svelte, easy to pivot millennial.
I'm willing to accept it, although my wife does work for Fandango, which is owned by NBC Universal.
Okay. Ewan, can you settle this? Who's right?
I've never heard of this show until this evening. I don't know if it's been shown in the UK at all. I like the premise of the show, but I think there's a certain element of it that if you're talking about a time travel thing, that's either got to be big budget or a bit crap.
I think that might be my favorite.
Jury's out, man. Jury's out. But I think it's a great premise. It does look a bit Farscape, a bit Torchwood. So there could be a good cult following, and they were fairly low budget. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Frankly, I kind of think it was big budget and a bit crap. I couldn't make it through the first episode, but I am alone among my friends. I've got plenty of other friends who loved this episode or loved this series. The Sci-Fi Channel, or SIFI, as some people pronounce it, will change its logo on June 19th for its 25th anniversary. Also adding two new shows, Krypton, a Superman prequel, and Happy, an all caps with an exclamation point named show about an ex-con turned hitman who meets a blue-winged talking horse. It's also working on adaptations of Brave New World, Hyperion, and Stranger in a Strange Land, as well as George R. R. Martin's sci-fi novella Night Flyers being turned into a series. Sci-Fi says it's hoping to become a home, quote, for fans to come in and celebrate the genre that they love.
Man, it seems like maybe they could have decided to do that back when they had a dominant position in that.
Hey, look, man, you're saying it's too late?
I'm not going to say it's too late. I'm going to say you're really late, Sci-Fi. Like, I mean, we're on third course right now. You're showing, I mean, I guess.
Well, they've actually come out and said in this Verge article, there's a couple quotes of them saying, yeah, we thought going for a bigger audience was the best way to go for a while. And turns out going for a niche dedicated audience seems really good to us right now. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, I think they're too late. I think they're full on too late because they're still, no matter what, their ship is anchored to the sinking vessel that is traditional extended cable television.
Well, you could say that about every single network, though. And I don't think every network is going to go down the tubes, right? It's just whether you can navigate the jump.
Sure. I'm only talking about the network that has thrice denied the name of its patron. You know, it's like there are so many times you get to turn on the people who brought you to the dance and then they stop showing up. And meanwhile, there's a much more interesting dance happened over on the internet.
Ewan, what do you make of this sci-fi network that won't even spell itself like sci-fi, but now says it's totally committed to sci-fi?
Well, see, the sci-fi network over here, I don't know if it's the same as what you get. That's the real problem that we have, because we definitely have
it. Is it spelled with Y's?
Sky. S-Y-F-Y. But but my wife, see, the thing that will be, I love the logo change. That's the big difference for me, because at the moment, the wife walks in, sees sci-fi in the top right corner and goes, nah, sorry, and walks out again. Now she'll stop and watch, and she might actually find something that she likes.
Yeah. Monday, Twitch started a 17-day marathon of all 886 episodes of Mr. Rogers. If you're just catching this now, don't worry. It will last for 17 days. So you can still jump in and watch. Twitter signed a multi-year deal with the NFL to live stream pregame coverage, as well as launching a 30-minute daily show covering the NFL. It's all part of that whole Twitter wants to be a video home thing. And clarification from a story we covered last week, George R. R. Martin revealed that the five pilot scripts, yes, they are five, according to George R. R. Martin, not four, he said this on his live journal, are being developed not based on any of his existing stories like Dunk and Egg. He says he doesn't want to have happen with other shows what happened with Game of Thrones, where the shows outdistance his creative output. So he says the shows will be entirely new and should be perceived as either prequels or successor shows rather than spinoffs, and not all five will necessarily make it to air.
Yeah, I think that's a very practical reality of programming that I think felt strange 20, 30 years ago. But nowadays, I think most fans are very attuned to that process where it's like, well, let's all hope this looks like it's good.
Yeah, and I like the idea that he's like, look, we've got a lot of world that I've created here, and I'm not going to touch every single part of it in my writing. So let's have you guys explore a part of it that I won't get to, but I think is still pretty worth exploring, and develop some pilots and let's see.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's talk about what we're watching on our screens these days. Ewan, what's been filling your eyeballs?
So I put in the dock, actually. We've just finished Billions. That's just finished here in the UK, the last season of that. The wife and I have been addicted to that. I think it's really good. Damien Lewis is brilliant in it, most definitely. So I can't complain about that one. We've also had, I'm desperately trying to find the stuff that I wrote down.
Well, you've got Genius from National Geographic. What's that about?
Genius. Yeah, no, so that's the Albert Einstein story. Have you guys not had that in the US?
You know what? I only know it by the advertisement of somebody who vaguely looks like a younger Albert Einstein with a smirk on his face.
Yeah, it's got Jeffrey Rush in it as well. He plays the older Einstein, which he features periodically in the first couple of episodes, but then it focuses on him working in the Swiss Patent Office up to the point that he comes up with his theory of relativity. But what's kind of nice is the way that the ideas that he has and the way that he views things and the thought experiments he does has come through. And I've got a better understanding of the process just from watching the CV series up to episode three at the moment. So I've really enjoyed that. We're getting Jamestown this month. And we've got House of Cards, of course, which you guys will have as well as. And tonight I watched Battle for Sebastopol, which was a story about Ludmilla, I can't pronounce her surname, but she was the most successful Russian sniper during the Second World War. And it was a really good film, really well done.
Yeah, I've heard this about this story before, but I didn't realize it would be made into a movie.
Now, 2015 is the date of the movie, but it's very good.
Most of the shows I've been watching will cover in spoiler in time, Better Call Saul, Fargo, et cetera. One thing I want to note is that I watched all of season two of Master of None. Now, granted, these are half hour episodes. There's only 10 of them. So it's a little faster to be able to make your way through. But man, I love Aziz Ansari. I think he did a masterful job. He's not even necessarily in a lot of the season. He's in most of it, but there's a couple of episodes where he's almost got a cameo role, and they go deep with one of the characters and kind of study them. There's a great one called Thanksgiving, which is a flashback episode going all the way back into the 90s, and they have other actors playing a young Dev, which is Aziz's character, and it explores the coming out story of his friend in her family, through several Thanksgivings, first not wanting to dress up in a dress and then coming out to the family and having them upset and then bringing girlfriends over. And then finally, the last episode is 2017 and things have started to resolve. They're not perfect, but they're getting better. And the overarching story about his romance and his day-to-day life and being single is really good, too. So I can't say enough good things. I absolutely love that season.
Right on, man. I watched Guardians of the Galaxy twice because I felt bad that I didn't see it the first week. So I've got thoughts that I'll share in spoiler in time. Of course, Better Call Saul, Fargo, Justified, and Tom, two things. Number one, last night was when I played catch-up, so I did not watch last night's Leftovers, which it sounds like you just loved.
I disliked it greatly.
Okay, we'll talk around that.
I felt like
that.
A chore to get through. And the only thing I'll say I'll save it until you've watched it and we can do spoiler in time on it, is that it's the first one that just didn't point to anything that's related to what's happening this season. It just felt so disconnected to me.
Did kind of like those episodes of Justified where the character would just come on and announce their intention and then walk off screen?
Not exactly. It was all about Matt. And so he's got his bad hair and he's just walking around trying to sound American.
To sound American? That doesn't sound like Matt at all.
And none of it felt like it mattered to everything else. Even the Australian episode that you didn't like, I felt like at least mattered to other people's stories. This one didn't.
All right. Well, I'll report. Maybe we'll do a special bulletin. I've been toying with the idea of maybe you and I just hopping on, doing a quick audio recording and throwing
keep an eye on the Patreon, patrons. Maybe we'll do that.
Meanwhile, though, I have to confess, we'll talk about this in spoiler in time, only watched half of American Gods. Come at me, bro. And not entirely sure I'm going to keep watching. Go ahead, though.
That's fair. If you don't like it, you don't like it, right? Bryce, what have you been on the lookout for?
Hey, guys. You guys heard this show on Netflix, Chewing Gum?
I've heard the buzz around it. I don't know anything about it.
So it was a Channel 4 show in the UK and in all the other territories. It's on Netflix. It's about this 24-year-old girl, Tracy, and she's growing up in a very religious household. She's a virgin. She's in a very sort of stuffy relationship with her boyfriend. It kind of follows her desire to learn more about sex and to for lack of a better word, get some. It actually kind of reminds me of Todd Margaret. You guys ever seen?
Oh my gosh! So all right. If we're doing the wine sommelier thing, I'm picking up intense hints of awkwardness,
yes.
Coupled by shame and and sexual ineptitude.
So a lot of Chewing Gum's conflicts come out of the thing in Todd Margaret, where Todd just kind of lies because he doesn't want to tell the truth.
Just keeps rolling with it.
And so she does kind of the same thing, except it's out of insecurity and kind of naivete, right? She doesn't want to appear.
Closer to like the 40-year-old virgin.
When
Steve Carell is talking about they're like bags of sand.
It's also
great.
Incredibly fast. It's kind of a very fast show. It's not like, I wouldn't call it like intricate like Arrested Development is.
Right.
But it's really fast. And series two is now on Netflix this past week or two. So if you're into that, British comedies, you maybe give it a look. And if you're in the UK, it is on the Channel 4 suite of apps, I believe. So
awesome.
Excellent. Didn't you got something we should be on the lookout for? Be sure to email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Ryan Brushwood, what else is going on?
For me?
Yeah. Man. I mean, you have The Store and Modern Rogue.
You know what? Actually, normally I've been pushing Modern Rogue, but truth is we just had a new release on The Store. Real quick, if you're looking for an afternoon of something fun to do for $21.99, for $22, you can get a card target, a set of plastic, beautiful, insanely gaudy practice cards, and some metal discs that we teach you how to make into Chinese throwing stars. So you can get an afternoon hanging out with your kid, poking out eyeballs, Please don't poke out eyeballs. But make some Chinese throwing stars or ninja stars or whatever you want to call them. Learn how to throw cards all on an amazing card target. That's over at scamstuff.com.
This is the card target plus throwing star kit. That's what it's called when you look for it.
Because we're just that clever with names.
And you know what the name of our next segment is? Frontlines.
Oh.
Throwing frontlines. That's what I call them. Netflix launched HDR video support for Android. As long as you have an LG G6, that's the only phone it works on so far. Now, at first, everybody thought, oh, that's because LG G6 is the only phone that supports Dolby Vision HDR. Netflix told The Verge, no, that's not the reason. They say Netflix supports HDR10 and Dolby Vision. Samsung has HDR, but the Galaxy S8 uses something called Mobile HDR Premium. So maybe that's the problem. There aren't a lot of phones that can support HDR yet on their screens, but the LG G6 is, and you can watch Netflix in it now on Android.
Meanwhile, Netflix has implemented Google's Widevine DRM scheme, which means the Netflix app from the Google Play Store will no longer work on rooted Android devices. Android police has verified that Netflix still runs properly if you manage to sideload the APK. I understood about a third of what I just said.
Yeah, well, and that's the point, right? Is that if you've rooted your phone, it's highly annoying that Netflix now doesn't work on it. I don't think Netflix did it because they don't want it to work on rooted phones. I think they said, we're going to use this DRM scheme. The fact that it doesn't work on rooted phones, we're not going to spend the money and time to fix. Sorry about that. But sideloading should work. And if you're smart enough to know how to root your phone, theoretically, you're smart enough to sideload an APK. Ewan, where do you come down on this?
Is this not for other platforms rather than worrying about phones per se?
I mean, so you think this just might be an artifact of a larger initiative that they've been pushing?
Yeah, I think there's I can't speak on specifics, but I don't know. But what I'm saying is that it just strikes me that this is an awful lot of effort to get rid of a phone access, which they have just you've just done a story that says that they want the devices to be able to use your account, but there's so much content being made with original content with good capital investment that I think they'd be silly not to put some level of DRM on it. And I think this is a broader picture, a broader spectrum of control.
Yeah, it is a smaller percentage of their audience that is going to be affected by this, and the fact that you can sideload means those people who took it into their own hands to root can also take it into their own hands to sideload. But it is certainly not going to gender goodwill towards Netflix amongst people who root their phones. YouTube TV announced today it has added AMC, BBC America, IFC, WeTV, and Sundance to its lineup. So it got all the AMC and AMC partner channels. Telemundo and Universo, NBC Universo, have also been added.
So how much do you think, I mean, yes, and they should definitely be partnering with everyone they possibly could partner with. But individually, it's so interesting because when you announce like these five stations join, I feel very little of the needle moving on my interest in jumping, but at some point I'm certain that I'm going to be like, wait, it's all of them and it's only.
Have
how
you
much
been
per month?
Looking at the plans? Have you been out there comparing YouTube and Hulu and PlayStation View and Sling TV lately?
Well, and that's the problem, right?
Is like, I think that's probably it. Yeah,
I am in a place of you know, my default inertia is to just sit put with whatever I have, and I've got to hear like, hey, it's really great over here in the rest of the world, and then I'll jump in.
Yeah. What's CBS been up to?
CBS has struck a deal with its affiliate board that will make it easier to strike deals for live streams of local stations on streaming services in the United States. Take that, Ewan. This follows similar arrangements by ABC, NBC, and their affiliates. CBS is also offering a bundle of CBS All Access and CBS-owned Showtime for $15. The package would cost $17,000. $17 purchased separately. A version of the bundle with no ads cost $19, again saving you $2 off of buying them separately. $2? Two whole bucks?
I mean, if you really want CBS All Access and Showtime,
that's almost enough to buy an MP3.
This is not going to change anybody's mind. This is CBS covering the bases, which is like, hey, we shouldn't make it hard to sign up for our own channel Showtime for people who are spending money on CBS All Access.
Correct.
John Pashofsky at BuzzFeed reports that sources say the availability of the Amazon Video app on Apple TV should be announced at WWDC on June 5th. Amazon will reportedly resume selling Apple TVs at that point as well. Now, we've talked about the idea of Amazon coming back to the Apple TV quite a bit last week, but it sounds like it'll actually be part of a big announcement, which Ewan kind of implies that maybe we'll get a bunch of Apple TV announcements.
I think this is a bi-directional thing in that Apple TV can then be sold on Amazon, which it doesn't at the moment. And I think it's an opportunity for Tim and Jeff to maybe share a stage. But it's either that or there's something massive coming, which is unreal.
Well, yeah, the new Apple TV and the new Siri speaker available for pre-order on Amazon.com today.
That ain't happening.
No, you're not buying that one.
Hey, by the way, here's a fun tip. I'm going to use the A word right here. If you have a Amazon Echo, ask Alexa to just say play sad trombone. It's pretty great. Because she definitely finds a track with the sad trombone. Whenever anything goes bad, you could just shout like, Siri, let's hear some applause. Or sorry, Alexa, play applause. And then, you know.
You could also say add daily tech headlines to flash briefing if you want.
We use a code on BTN. So you ask for, hey, Tim, okay, Sergey, or just Jeff.
I like it.
It's good. It's a good point. Meanwhile, Hulu named Joel Stillerman to the newly created role of Chief Content Officer. Stillerman has been head of original programming at AMC and Sundance since 2008. What have you done for me lately, Joel Stillerman?
Well, he has done The Walking Dead lately, which has been the biggest show on television, whether you like it or not.
Name
it's huge.
One biggest show on television he's done. Just one.
Yeah, exactly. The Walking Dead. He also came in early on in the Mad Men and Breaking Bad years. Now, he didn't bring them to AMC, but he steered their ships for a while. Better Call Saul was under him. So, I mean, I think by all accounts, AMC has been pretty successful with its originals. He brought Preacher to AMC. So this could be a really good thing for Hulu.
Name three more of my favorite shows that he's brought to. that's good news.
All right, let's get to some dispatches from La Front. Tyler says, my parents have been thinking about becoming cord killers recently to save some money, and I wanted to check to get your advice on what you recommend them to do. The biggest thing they love watching is live sports, so I was thinking of setting them up with a Sling TV account, Netflix, they already have Amazon Prime, and possibly Hulu. I don't know much about Hulu, but figured between Sling TV, Netflix, and Prime, they would be pretty happy. Also, what device would you recommend as well for them to use? Roku, Chromecast, Apple TV, etc., or maybe even just buying a new smart TV. Anyway, thanks for any help you can give me. Love your shows.
Can I say flatly to Tyler that that assuming so you have the big ones. You have, you know between Hulu, Sling TV, Netflix, and so on. Unless there you care about live sports, I think you should in your mind make a fourth/fifth tier network. Say it costs $20 a month and it's called If You Don't Have It, Buy It. And I'll bet you like that's your go-to thing is you check. And if you don't have it, whatever it is, give yourself permission to buy it. Maybe you won't be able to watch it live. You'll probably be able to watch it later that same day or early the next morning or whatever. But I'm almost certain you'll come in under $20 a month.
That is very good advice. And if you can convince your parents of it, do so. I think that may be the hurdle is sometimes parents just won't listen and be like, that sounds expensive, even though you could rationally show them that it's not. Also, they do love watching live sports. And what I would recommend is not just go straight to Sling TV. What sports do they watch? What channels do they need in your area to watch them? And then look at PlayStation View, look at Hulu, look at YouTube TV, and look at Sling and find out which of them brings those important channels to them, because almost all of these have regional sports networks, but they may not have all the regional sports networks. All of them have ESPN now, and maybe that's all they need. And then you could figure out, okay, which one is cheaper for them to get for the sports that they want to watch. Are they Big Ten fans? You know, then you got to put the Big Ten shows on there. So I would do a little comparison shopping for their sports needs to pick that. Then it sounds like you're doing right. They've got Amazon Prime. They've got Hulu and Netflix. And as far as the hardware goes, if you end up picking YouTube TV for them for some reason, you're going to want to get the Chromecast. That may or may not be parent-friendly, depending on how smartphone savvy they are. So I would recommend Roku as probably the best because it has Amazon. You might look at the Fire TV, though, because it has Amazon as well. It doesn't have all of those streaming accounts, though, and Roku does.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? I take that back. Hulu TV has not launched on Roku yet, so... That's another part.
I can't talk for the American services, but the one thing I'd say, Tyler, is kind of develop in your own mind a pie chart and look at the biggest quadrant that you've got that's for what element. So if live sports is only 10%, then that can sap 80% or 90% of your total budget.
Yeah.
And not deliver the bang for buck, if you like, that you possibly want from it. So, I mean, for my parents personally, I know I would – all day, every day, I would use the Apple TV account that I've got that they already have, and I would put Netflix on it, and I'd put Amazon Prime on it where I possibly can, because that gives them old stuff that they can relate to, that they'll search for, that they can use the voice search for and get something that they will want to watch. But they're not live sports fans either. But I think live sports always chimes a bell in my head over budget loss.
Yeah. Mark writes in, "Hey gang, I'm a longtime listener to Cord Killers all the way back to the frame rate days, and I thought you might be interested in this new cord cutting / website / FAQ / tutorial thing put together by Plex. It brands Plex as, quote, a cord cutter's best friend, and their introduction even contains the phrase, quote, watch what you want when you want. Thank you very much, Mark, and that's over at cordcutter.plex.tv, right?
Cord cutting is a term that means canceling traditional pay TV services like cable or satellite TV.
Should make a bookmarklet that changes cord cutting to cord killing and then says cordkillers.tv.
I mean, this is actually, for somebody who knows nothing, this is not for our audience, but if you guys are needing to explain cord cutting to somebody who knows nothing about it, it's pretty good. Very good introductory. We got our boss from Kansas, but soon to be Delaware. Another Jay Martin says, "My wife and I are moving from Kansas to Delaware, apparently, at the beginning of June, and we're going to cancel DirecTV to become cord cutters. I really dislike talking on the phone, especially with pushy customer service representatives. I know the reps are going to try to convince me that I don't have to cancel because I'm moving, or I can sign up for DirecTV now, which I do not want. Do you or anyone in the audience have suggestions for ripping the DirecTV Band-Aid off as quickly and painlessly as possible?" So this is somebody who doesn't want to take the challenge, Brian. It's like, look, I've already decided I don't want it. How can I get through my call as fast as possible?
You know, I wish I had a super simple explanation, but as a magician, all I could think of is overly complicated ones.
I've got one.
Oh, do you?
Because I had to cancel Comcast last year when I got Google Fiber. And I spent maybe 40 minutes on the phone with the guy trying to be like, no, I don't want to tell you what I'm doing in my life. I don't want to give you analytics and an exit interview. And the annoyance of that, the sheer like hatred I have of that moment in my life.
Yeah.
I wish I just told him, I'm going to Google Fiber. No, I don't want the sale. No, I don't want your thing. No, I don't want your thing. Just stomach through it.
Yeah.
I feel like it's going to be the quickest thing. Rather than trying to, because I try to stand up and not like want to give them details about myself.
Sure. Well, and keep in mind, and this is the social engineer in me coming out, where it's like you could begin, like they'll ask you whatever question they want, but at some point they're going to hand you the ball. And then in that moment, there's no appropriate way for them to break your sentence midway. So at that moment, you say, "Hey, I understand you have a job to do. I understand there's things you have to say. But just so you know, from now on, I'm going to say nothing, but I would like to cancel my service.
I did all of that.
Well, no.
I did.
What I'm saying is you will not get anything out of me but the following phrase from this point forward. And then very quickly, because by announcing your objective, my objective is to cancel, then he says, well, let me figure out how to meet your needs and make all of us happy, win-win and all that stuff. I'm saying don't give him that. Don't tell him your objective. Instead, saying here is a fact that you will very quickly figure out is real. Everything you say will be met with no thank you starting now. And that's a very different tactic, I feel like. But
there you go, another okay. Jay Martin. You got lots of different perspectives to draw from. Hope one of them works for you. We're all going to hug now. And talk about Andy, who wrote in and says, I was obsessed with the box office as long as I can remember. So when you guys started the movie draft, I started a draft with some family and friends. And so I made a little chart to forecast and track the possible outcomes. For each movie, you can enter a low gross if it underperforms, unexpected gross, or a high gross if it overperforms. The spreadsheet then gives you a range that each player's total should be within. As movies premiere and soar or bomb, you can update the values each week. Once they end their theatric run, the values become set across the low, expected, and high grosses. I filled in the spreadsheet for the Diamond Club movie draft and entered in my own expected grosses. Of course, the numbers for movies that haven't come out yet or finished earning movies are just my opinions, so feel free to make a copy and put in your own values. In the last column, labeled custom, you can mix and match low, expected, and high grosses, so you can answer questions like, if everything goes as expected, but Pirates underperforms, what will the total be? Hope someone besides me finds this fun or useful. You can find it at bit.ly/moviedraftforecaster.
Yeah, dude. Thank you so much for sending that over. Meanwhile, Andy, it might be the same Andy or a different one. We talked about his question last week about whether or not I was actually a fan of Star Wars anymore. He says, Brian, perfect answer on the show. Sorry for mixing up your comments. I, too, have read tons of Expanded Universe, but none of the new books. I grew up watching the original trilogy and saw Episode 1 my senior year in high school. In fact, a friend and I performed a lightsaber duel to Duel of the Fates during our senior band concert. I was in full Darth Maul costume and makeup. Nerdiest moment of my life. So, yes, no matter how bad the movies are, we will always love the story and the universe, and the legends will never be forgotten. But I should have clarified, I was talking specifically about the movies. In a longer version of the email, I made a comparison of my relationship to horror movies. I'm not a horror movie fan. Therefore, if I don't like a horror movie that got positive reviews from viewers and critics, I don't blame the movie. I blame the fact that I'm not a fan of horror movies. So I was just curious if you think that might or might one day be similar to your relationship to the non-original trilogy Star Wars movies. I think actually horror movies is a fantastic metaphor to make, because the folks who go to horror movies, they're aware that by and large, 80% of stuff under the horror genre is garbage. But they love horror enough that they keep showing up thinking maybe this will be the next Exorcist, or maybe this will be the next Chainsaw Massacre, or Nightmare on Elm Street, or whatever. And so in that regard, I would say I'm very much a fan of the Star Wars universe, because I will, like a sucker, keep showing up to every single movie, hoping that it's as good as the original trilogy, even though in my heart of hearts, I know that's very unlikely.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode of Cord Killers. You and Rankin, my friend, thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Thanks for letting me come, man. I've really enjoyed being back.
Dude,
I'm glad to have you, man.
Yeah, you're about to have to get up for tomorrow over there, right?
No. I'm sticking around for spoilering.
Oh, right on.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm not half in. I'm all in.
All right. Done and done.
Fantastic. Well, if folks want to find out more about BTN and what the great stuff you got going on over there, where should they go?
BritishStuntNetwork.com. We got the Bash coming up on the 1st of July, which is awesome. It's the most fun you'll ever have with your clothes on. And we've got loads of shows going on. The Pocket Show is back, which is all about your mobile platforms only. Max Show, Big Show as normal. Daily Show with Kyle every single day. And we're on patreon.com/BritishTechNetwork if you want to give us a few bucks for the effort. Thank you.
Go check them out, British Tech Network. Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. We're live on diamondclub.tv Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll kill your cords again next week.
Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you could gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker,
let's go.
It's up to you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.